Thank you for being here. Is it all right if I move this onto here, or is that... Is it tied on? Okay, I'm going to just stand in front of this thing because my notes are... Let's see here. Is there a way to go to the presenter's view? There's not all my notes are on there. Well, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to, I'm going to go from this, and I'll have you play the videos when it's, because I need to see all the quotes and things that I haven't memorized them all. So I'm just going to do it here, and then I'll have you play the videos up there, and that'll work great. Be perfect. All right, 1 second here. Okay, well, again, thank you for being here. The pastor asked how many had seen the film, and it looked like there was a decent number of you, so you kind of know the ideas and the philosophies of what I'm talking about, what I'm trying to expose. In Nehemiah in the Bible, if you haven't read that book recently, I encourage you to. There's tremendous parallels to today. Nehemiah, he saw and heard from someone the report from Jerusalem that the walls were down and it was just decimated. Well, it's kind of like what's happened in our country. The walls are down and they've been down for a long time. That's why evil has been able to come and go as it pleases. There's no opposition to it. But when he saw that, when he heard the report from Jerusalem, it broke his heart. I hope it breaks your heart what has happened to America. It should. And the neat thing about that story of Nehemiah, he was burdened by that. He prayed and fasted that God would use him to rebuild those walls. We each individually need to be praying, God, what would you have me to do? He has something for every single one of us. Regardless of our age, there's things we need to be doing to rebuild the walls in America. And that's the only hope for America is us doing that with God's help. The neat thing about that story is with great leadership, a vision, a clear vision of what was to be done, the walls that had been down in Jerusalem for 150 years were rebuilt in 52 days. That's what God can do. We don't have to do the impossible. We don't have to save America because we can't save America. But God can. And when I first started really studying things about 10 years ago and I realized the walls were down, it broke my heart. I was so concerned for my children. I thought, wait a minute, I got to do something. If I don't stand up, they're going to live in a nightmare. And so that's kind of how we got into making a film when we'd never made a film before because I felt that's what God wanted me to do. This talk is on the purposeful, premeditated treason that has been the fruit and the result of what has happened in our country. And it's a very purposeful plan. When you see that what has happened to America is not an accident, it's not just the way things go, it is a plan of many different people and groups of the left to dismantle our families, which is God's institution, dismantle our churches, which is God's institution, and dismantle the state the way it's supposed to be of limited government, which is God's institution. They've sought to take the jurisdiction from the family and church and pile it all on the state to make a powerful, centralized government that is always evil. You study world history the last 6,000 years, there's not one example of big government that wasn't abusive over his people. God never meant man to have that kind of power over man. That's why he set clear jurisdictions over the family, over the church, and over the state. And when you obey those, you have the most wonderful, blessed, free, godly society you could ever have. And when you disregard those and do what you want to do man's way, you have destruction, pain, sorrow, suffering, and confusion. And that's what we have today. Now, go to the next slide there. I forgot he's getting those up there too. As you can see, this is one of the charts from the new film, Masters of Deceit. I know you can't see all those details, but listen to me. I want you to know our enemy has a plan. They have an agenda of exactly what they're trying to accomplish. And they have a commander-in-chief that is Satan. That's why it's so organized, it's so coordinated, it's so consistent, and it always gets it right. It always knows what to attack and what is good and right and true. They never miss a beat on anything, which tells you something's going on here. I think that's why people are always looking for the top man. Is it the Rockefellers or is it this? Or there has to be someone because it's so organized. There has to be one person leading this. Well, there is, but it's Satan. That's why generationally, different countries, it's all marching to the same drumbeat of total destruction of God's way of doing things. And it's consistent in that. And their dedication is satanic. It is mind-boggling how you would work your whole life to destroy the very country your own grandchildren are going to grow up in. It's unbelievable. But they are spiritually blind. When you rebel against God, He blinds you to the obvious, and that's what has happened. That's why they can work day and night on these things that a five-year-old would say, that's not going to work. But they think it's the greatest thing, and anyone that doesn't agree with them is an idiot, that, oh, you don't get it. Well, they're blind, and God has made them blind, and they will not see. 2,500 years ago, and if you double-click onto the next slide, there was a man named Sun Tzu, and he wrote a book called The Art of War, which is still one of the main manuals used at all our military academies in America. It was a masterpiece of warfare and strategy. And he said in that book, if you know your enemy, you'll win the battle 50% of the time. If you know yourself, you'll win the battle 50% of the time. But if you know yourself and you know your enemy, you will win 100% of the time. And as I read that, I thought, you know what? In America, we don't know either one. We don't know who we are, and we don't know who we're fighting. We don't know the philosophies and the ideologies that are destroying us from within. And so we're just ripe for the picking, especially our children. They don't know anything about anything. And so they did anything. Every story sounds true to you hear the other side. And we have left them like sitting ducks because they've not been given the truth and their ability to defend God's word in every area of life. And so when they go off to government schools, or as our statistics tell us, at the colleges and universities, we lose 85 to 95%. It's going up dramatically in one semester. Not 4 years of college, one semester we lose them. That's how inadequate we've done in preparing them for the battle of worldviews. The biblical worldview against secular humanism, Marxism, Islam, all these other worldviews that they don't know anything about. And so they sound really good if you don't know the truth. Now, this is just a little, a brief trailer that they're going to play here in just 1 second of the film, because it kind of sets up some of the different areas I'm going to talk about in the talk. So, Chris, if you want to play number 5.
You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
And this is the point I think Americans need to comprehend. If America goes down economically, it will go down militarily. If America goes down militarily, we all go down. The free world is finished, and will be finished for a very, very long time.
Everything, practically, is in a self-destructive mode.
We're in the most critical period we've been since the Revolutionary War.
You're not alert. You're not awake with what's happening.
They would just as soon see this country on its knees and everything equalized.
That concept of collectivism, big government, is a magnet for the predator class.
the plans for all of this are to have everything globally in place by 2020.
If we're that dumb and we allow this to happen,
we deserve everything we're going to get, because we're going to get it right in the neck.
We're headed into what could be a nightmare that would make all the atrocities of the 20th century look like they were a dress rehearsal.
When people are afraid, they ask government to do more, not less.
Their theories are designed to scare the people to believe there's a crisis when there is not a crisis at all. There's no crisis.
I think we are losing more and more freedom because we are afraid.
The left wants you to believe that catastrophe is always just around the corner. And the only way to avoid it is to do exactly what they say. But this film will show everything they do is just a Trojan horse of deceit, carefully crafted to advance their real agenda of finishing America off.
We have been the main stumbling block to world communism since it first raised its ugly head.
From the promotion of Islam to the propaganda of climate change, from the deceit of Common Core to the manufactured economic crisis, and from their manipulation of the evangelical church to the unsustainable debt burden, this film will show the issues are simply being used as a smokescreen to hide the purposeful, premeditated, treasonous attacks on the foundations of our freedom.
The war on religion has just purged us from being able to determine right from wrong.
You know what Alexander Solzhenitsyn said about Russia? How the communists took over Russia? He said, "We forgot God."
Their stated agenda, carved in stone on a monument in Georgia and outlined in documents placed in the Ark of Hope, is to eliminate 6.5 billion people by century's end. And they will succeed if we don't stop them.
This is not just a fight for the United States of America. This is a fight for civilization itself.
It's everything Karl Marx dreamed of before our eyes.
I think they've pushed us over the cliff and ever since. America isn't going to fall. We are falling.
So I'm just going to briefly go into some of those areas it talks about. I can't get into all the details of things, but just the point of my talk is to help you really grasp the idea that we are in the midst of a revolution in this country from within. It's a purposeful revolution, a destruction of everything that is good and right and true. It's purposeful and it's strategic, and we need to understand that. It's not just people with differing views on things. It's people that are carefully working to destroy the foundations. And we need to be engaged in this battle. Back in the 1960s, there was one of the 60s radicals for the SDS, Students for a Democratic Society, that said, and they gave us a key to their strategy. They said, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. Now listen to that. It's a key element of the attack. The issue is never the issue. Whatever the women's rights or this or that, the issue is never the issue. The issue is always the revolution. We're going to use every little issue we can to fight for the revolution of destroying this country from within. And that's what they've done. They know how to package their ideas where they sound very appealing. If it's a Christian they're trying to reach, they'll pack them in with Jesus' name in there or whatever to make us feel like, oh, that sounds, must be a good thing. That man was talking about Jesus. Because we're ignorant of what God's Word says, so everything sounds good if it's packaged in Christian labels and terms. But there's a plan behind it. If you go to the next, I think some of these fonts got messed up. We went from Apple to PC. In 1999, the BBC had a poll to determine who was the greatest thinker of the last 1,000 years. That's a long time, not 100, 1,000. And this will help you understand the idea, the philosophies of who we're fighting. Guess who won that? Karl Marx. And at first I thought, that's ridiculous. And then I said, no, it's not. He has had more influence on this world today than anyone in 1,000 years. His ideas, you know, we've been told communism is dead and the Cold War is over, and nothing could be further from the truth. They accomplished the greatest feat that has ever been done in the history of warfare. They convinced their enemies they no longer existed. And so they're running about in our colleges and universities and the media. There was just a film this last year. Trumbo, whatever. It was about one of the Hollywood screenwriters who was a communist. It made him look like he was the greatest person of all time. He was a communist agent trying to subvert Hollywood. And it's everywhere we go. And the Marxist ideas are being accepted. That's what's being taught our children. I think if you interviewed people and surveyed them under 40 in this America, most of them, the ideas and philosophies of Marxism, they would be totally for. Because they don't understand what it is. The foundation of it is this simple. It's the philosophy that the good of the many outweigh the good of the few. And if that sounds good to you, you've been influenced. America was never about the good of the many outweighing the good of the few. Why? Because when you have that philosophy, there's always going to be minority groups that are going to be abused. Because all you're worried about is the many. And you have another problem with that. When big government will tell you what's for the good of the many. You have no way of knowing what's best for everyone in every society in the country. So when they tell you, you need to do this to save the planet or whatever, you have to go, oh, okay, I guess we better do that. So you're just ripe to be abused. America was about protecting each individual person because they are precious, they're made in the image of God, and their life is priceless. And that's why our founding fathers, if you read their writings, everything they talked about, how do we protect the individual? How do we make sure government can't intrude on them? Society can't intrude on them? They are free to do what is right before God, and no one can get near them and touch them. That's what America was about. Because they knew, if you take care of the individuals, the collective will be just fine. But when you start pooling things for the masses, a good old Marxist term, you abuse people. People have no value, no meaning. In the Islamic ideology and in the communist ideology, it's identical. Each individual human life has no value whatsoever. It's expendable for anything. And that's not America, and that's not Christianity. One of the greatest Marxist thinkers of the 20th century was a man named Vladimir Lenin, who was the founder of the Soviet Union. He was a genius at strategy, and I've read a lot of his things. And he said, the best way to control the opposition is to lead it yourself. The best way to control the opposition is to lead it yourself, and that is what has happened in this country. They realize you infiltrate, subvert, and come from the inside, rise up, and take things over. And that is what they have done. That's what they did to the Christian church. On so many different things, as I studied this and dug in deeply, that is what they've been working at for 80, 90 years, and that's what they do. One of the interesting things that is a result of making these films is when I first made the first film, it started to circulate through the grassroots all over America. And I started to get calls from older gentlemen that were retired intelligence, that loved this country. They were good men that met together. Some of them were in groups, CIA, FBI, even KGB agents that had defected to the West. And they said, your movie is one, they just loved it, but they said it doesn't even touch the tip of the iceberg. We were in the middle of this. We know exactly what is going on. And they said, but I built friendships with many of these people, and it was just eye-opening that they would tell me firsthand so many different things. And one day I got a call from one of those gentlemen, and he said, Curtis, can you be in Houston tomorrow? And I said, which is funny, right here in the Houston area. And I live in Boise, Idaho. And I said, I think so. Is it important? He said, yes, it is. I said, okay, I'll be in Houston tomorrow. So anyway, I got there, and they had flown in a gentleman named Pavel Stroilov from the Soviet Union. He was born and raised in the Soviet Union. And who he is, his mentor was a man named Alexander Litvinenko. And that name you might have heard of. He was the man that was poisoned by Putin with radioactive plutonium-210. And he was a KGB agent of Alexander Litvinenko. Well, this was his protege, and I met with him. And it was so interesting. We talked about so many different things. While Alexander Litvinenko was alive, he got Pavel a job at the Kremlin, working in the Gorbachev Institute. And while he was there, he stole 50,000 top-secret documents from Gorbachev's record while he was in office, his private memos, his stuff. And he took those, and some of these intelligence men I tell you about, they're translating them all into English from Russian. But those things, the ones they've given to me, they reveal everything we thought was true was true. Just from the United Nations being a Marxist organization, Gorbachev said, that is our group. It's our instrument for world policy. We control it. We are going to have world government through the United Nations, and we will control it. And on and on. The environmental movement, that is our new vehicle to take over the world. And so many different things, even with radical Islam. We arm it, we fund it, we finance it, we stir them up, and let them create the chaos that we can take advantage of. And so it was a lot of very sobering facts. But he answered a question for me, Pavel, one key question, many, but that was so important. I said, Pavel, why didn't communism die? I mean, it was proven to be a total failure. Why didn't it die? And this is what he said. It was so profound to me because I've been studying this for 10 years full time. He said, Curtis, it's still around and thriving more than it ever has because it never had its trial. Nazism is gone today because when the World War II ended, we had a trial. We exposed the evil of Nazism to the world. We had the Nuremberg trials. And so the whole world knew that's not a good thing. He said, when you guys won the Cold War, which is a joke, he said, you didn't win anything. He said, you didn't have a trial. You didn't. All the communist dictators that had slaughtered their own people, there was no justice, there was no exposing the evil, and so it began to flourish. You didn't go into the Soviet Union and remove the KGB from all the positions of power. He goes, they're stronger today than they have ever been, but you think they don't even exist. And he just went thing after thing, and all of a sudden it made sense. I mean, they didn't have their... Gorbachev. Mikhail Gorbachev, do you know what he did immediately upon stepping down from the Soviet Union? He started an environmental group, Green Cross International. And it's one of the most powerful environmental groups in America, in the world today. They simply changed colors. They repackaged the red agenda that had had a bad name in the 20th century, and they put green wrapping on it. That's all that is, and we get into details of that. It's important to understand your enemy and to understand what's going on. And another key that was given to us, and I'll get more on some of that in just a minute. Another key that Vladimir Lenin gave us of their strategy, what they do, is this quote here. Carefully, attentively, and skillfully take advantage of every, even the smallest fissure among the enemy. Seize every, even the smallest opportunity of gaining a mass ally, even though this ally be temporary, vacillating, unstable, unreliable, and conditional. Those who do not understand this fail to understand even a grain of Marxism. So what does that say in English? It says Marxists are about using people, everyone they can, anyone they can. They'll use their enemy, they'll use their friends, they'll use anybody, any group, anything. They use people to gain control, to accomplish their goals, and they've been very successful at it. The next slide, one of the little parts that the film gets into, the new film, is about the extremist assimilation into our society. We know from our own records that the communists were infiltrating the Christian churches and seminaries and divinity schools in America, at least by the 1930s, maybe even in the 20s, getting into all the those seminaries to train the pastors. But here's the thing we didn't think about is they were also getting into all the Islamic seminaries in the Middle East. And Alexander Litvinenko, that KGB agent that defected and then died in London, before he died in London, he told Pavel and others in the news that was there, our media, of course, didn't cover it, but he said, I want you to know, and this is why Pavel said, this is why Putin killed him, he was starting to expose radical Islam and the former Soviet Union are hand in glove. He said, I want you to know, the terrorist attacks against the Soviet Union, remember when the apartment buildings were blown up in the Soviet Union, all this stuff? He said, we did it, the KGB. Islamics didn't do that. We wanted to make it look like we were against them. And so, oh, they're attacking us too and all this. That was all just a show. And he also said, we have been training, financing, arming all the top leaders of radical Islam for 50 years in our country. This is nothing new. He said that, and then he said the head of the KGB right now is a Soviet agent that has trained here with our KGB for a decade. So a lot of things are not how we see them to be. Another thing we found out in the 90s, when a lot of the KGB files and stuff were opened as an act of goodwill toward us, have you ever heard of the Palestine Liberation Organization, the PLO? That was the biggest, most powerful, one of the first key Islamic terrorist groups in the world. In the 70s and 80s, it just ruled the world. Well, we know now, that wasn't Islamic at all. That was KGB agents from the Soviet Union acting like they're Islamists. The PLO was 100% KGB Soviet Union. They were stirring the pot because they love chaos. You read their writings, we want to do anything to create chaos because when things are in chaotic, it's easy to put up your puppet guy and say, he's for the people. We need to change this government here in Egypt or wherever. We need to change things around. They love chaos. Because when people are fearful, they'll accept anything if they think it'll solve their problems. Ion Pacepa, who was head of the Romanian KGB, had a meeting with Andropov, who was head of the Soviet KGB, in 1972. And Ion Pacepa has now defected to America many years ago. He realized the evils of communism. But he let us know. He said, we sent, just at that one time in 1972, 4,000 Soviet agents into the Islamic world to stir up hatred against Israel and the United States, to get into the seminaries, to work their way up where they are the leaders of Islam. They act like they're Islamists, but they're the leaders themselves, so they can control the useful idiots, is what they call the people, like in America that they use, the people in any country they use, they call them useful idiots. They're people, they believe our propaganda, we use them to accomplish whatever our goal is, and they legitimize us. He goes, one of their key strategies they talked about all the time, they go, we have to have it where the majority of people pushing for the world communism aren't communist. It adds legitimacy to us. They're like, no, they're well-meaning Christians that have bought into this utopia, or they're well-meaning these people. That's what makes us so validated. Because people will attack them, and the people go, we're not communists. What is communism? But they're being used for the movement and for the struggle for world communism. Dr. Sheriat, one of the gentlemen I interviewed in the new film, he lives in Dallas. You ought to go up there and see him, or maybe have him come speak here sometime, Pastor. One of the sweetest Christian men I've ever met. He's kind of just talking to him. His business card says this: I love people that are optimistic for the Lord. He has a satellite TV station that goes into Iran 24/7 Christian broadcasting. TV station. They can't stop it because it's coming from satellites. 24 hours a day. And his business card says, Iran Alive is his ministry. Iran Alive Ministries. It says, turning Iran into a Christian nation this generation. I said, can I give you a hug? I'm sorry. I love that. He said, God's going to do it. He said, right now, in Iran, and that's where he was born and raised, so he's been there and done that. He said right now, he would estimate 75 to 80% of Muslims. He said they're not only secular Muslims that aren't serious about Islam, they're not only could take it or leave it, he goes, They hate Islam with every fiber in their body. They've lived under it now in the way it was supposed to be perfect with the Ayatollah, where you have the religious leader and the political leader are one person. It's supposed to create a utopia on earth, just like communism. And they've been under it for 40 years now and go, it's a nightmare. They've been abusing us, our own government, our own. So they know it's a lie. He said he's getting calls every day from children of the top Islamic leaders that have gotten saved. And they said, we see it's a lie. Our father doesn't pray to Allah. He doesn't do anything he tells the people to do. He is in this for power and control. And that's what it's about. I go into that in the film, but Islam and communism are twins. They are ideologies. One has a religious veneer. The other one now is getting a pagan veneer with earth worship and paganism with the environmental movement. But they are only about one thing, total control of the planet. And that is all it is about. And that's why I asked Dr. Sherrod. I said, are you telling me the leaders, the Islamic leaders of the world are not praying to Allah and really care about his thing? He smiled and he said, are you kidding? It is power and control. They're just using the useful idiots that believe that Allah is the answer or whatever, and they're just using them. They always use people. And that's why we have to expose them. That's not right to allow these people to be used in a lie for evil. As more and more are brought to America, it's not a good thing. But we as Christians need to take advantage of that. We need to be sharing the gospel with them. They are trapped, many of them, with fear. That is a religion of fear. That's all it is about. You don't know if you're going to heaven or not. There's no forgiveness. There's no love. It is you obey or else, and maybe you'll get into heaven. Well, we have hope to share with them. We have a security in Jesus Christ, and we need to be sharing that. That's what Dr. Sherriott said. He goes, you need to be loving on them. They know nothing of real love. And if you love on them, he goes, it's amazing what God can do through that. And our educational system, my goodness. When something has been going the wrong direction for 70 years, straight years, it seems like people go, something's broken. We can't keep doing what we've always done. But it's always throw more money at it or whatever. Well, John Dewey, who was, of course, the founder of the government school system the way it is running today, he was a founding member of the Social Society in America. He was the author of the Humanist Manifesto, which is rotten to the core if you read it. He was one of the founders of the American Civil Liberties Union. Now, if you're not aware of that, I know it has a great name. They always do. All their groups have wonderful names. The American Civil Liberties Union was started by a man named Roger Baldwin. And Roger Baldwin, when asked, what is the point of the ACLU, said, communism is the goal, period. And if that's not enough proof of where they're coming from, when the ACLU first started, their office in New York City for years was inside the Communist Party headquarters, USA. That's where it was started from. They actually had an office in the Communist Party. It's all about twisting and abusing and turning everything on its head. But one of the top Marxist groups in America over the last 30 years or so is a committee in Chicago called the Committee to Defend the Bill of Rights. It's a communist organization. The Committee to Defend the Bill of Rights. Who's not for that? I mean, they get tax funding, they do a lot of damage, and we just sit by. The next slide there, and this just briefly goes into it, but here's the thing I want you to understand. Whether it's been Republicans in there, unfortunately, or Democrats, it's been going the wrong direction consistently. The higher-ups in the Republican Party are elitist just as much as those in the Democratic Party. They're hoping, I think, to be able to have a big government model that's not abusive of the people. I think some of them, but it doesn't matter. You get to the same path, and government has to be abusive. Do you know why? Unlike Bernie and all all the young people love Bernie, you can never stop at socialism. You know why? Because socialism doesn't work. And so sooner or later, you have to get totalitarian because you have to pull out the guns to make people do what they won't do on their own. Why? Because we are sinful human beings. We're naturally lazy, selfish. We do what we want to do. And when you're in a system of socialism that says everyone gets paid the same regardless of what they do, everyone eats whether they work or not, you're defying God's principles. That's why it can't work. He will not allow it to work. The Bible says, if a man doesn't work, neither shall he eat. It's very, very clear. And the charity throughout America and the world was always supposed to be done by the church and individuals. So there's accountability. So you know if the guy's just lazy, and if he is, you don't help him. That's not loving and kind to help a guy and to encourage him in his laziness. But when you find the guy that really does need help, you do help him sacrificially. But you're there to keep, hey, did you go to that job interview I set up for you? Did you? And you keep helping them along, and you're there, and they know there's accountability because you're watching. You're checking on them. Hey, what are you doing? You need to, you know, do this. And there's accountability, and that helps people get out of poverty. Big government enslaves people in poverty. And that was the point of it. The Great Society problem, Great Society programs were for one purpose only, if you read enough of LBJ, to guarantee the black society would be voting Democrat from here on out. He was warned by Senator Daniel Moynihan that he came to the president and said, Mr. President, if you implement this Great Society program, it will destroy the black families in America. And he said, I don't care, it'll guarantee their votes. If you study him enough, he was not a good man. He did not do it with a well-meaning heart. They knew, I don't care, we want the vote. And so it's sad, and we allow that to happen. We shouldn't have. That's evil. The black families in America have been destroyed through the welfare system. That's our fault for sitting idly by and not standing up and fighting that with everything in us. But the education thing here, real quickly, a key strategy they always use too, which I just, as I studied them, I finally figured this out. Do you ever think it's funny how they give their different programs names? You think, well, why would you give it a name? Why don't you just do those things like in the Common Core? Why wouldn't you just implement those things in the system? No one knows what's going on anyway, and not give it a name so it's something for us to attack. But as I studied, I realized they want us to have something to attack. They want those of us that are awake and engaged to have an enemy. So we're focused on Common Core, where we're going to beat that Common Core. So we're just focused on the branches of the tree. We never get to the root of the problem. It's very strategic. Give your enemy a little icon to go attack while you're still marching forward in all these other areas. It'll keep them busy. They'll feel like they did something. And if they even beat it, they'll feel like, oh, we had a great victory. We beat Common Core. But they'll go, we still were taking all the children the 5 years it took for you to implement, to stop Common Core. And guess what? We went ahead and implemented everything in Common Core anyway. We just didn't tell you about it. That's like outcomes-based education, all these different reform programs of the 80s and 90s. We thought we beat them, but if you look at what those were, they're all in the schools today anyway. They name things specifically to give you a target so you're not focused on them. And it's very strategic. The environment. I'm going to, briefly, this is an issue that is not going away in your lifetime. It will not go away. Doesn't matter any facts we have, doesn't matter. Why? Because you cannot stop, you cannot step back from a movement of saving the planet. I mean, you can't get grander than that. You can't step back from that to some other little cause. You'll lose half of your people. So it's not going away. Doesn't matter how many facts we have, it is going to be in our face. But we need to know the facts to help wake those up. Now, I'm going to just give you a couple quick ones. The movie has more, and there's hundreds of great books out there now that expose the lies of environmentalism. But here's one interesting one. It's disgusting and shocking, but what is the foundation of the entire environmental movement? CO2 is a pollutant. That's the bedrock of the whole thing. If you have a big carbon footprint, how dare you? I didn't go to government schools, thankfully, and that would be humorous to me if it wasn't so evil to lie to people like that. CO2 literally is plant food. It's fertilizer for everything that is green, and they call their movement the Green Movement. That's going to cut carbon dioxide, which hurts everything that is green. The current levels of CO2 in the world are 425 parts per million. Okay? Well, if you go home and Google what's the optimum CO2 level for everything green, you will find the best level is 1,600 parts per million. We're at 1/4 of the optimum level of CO2 for everything that is green to thrive. That's why greenhouses have the CO2 machines just pumping carbon dioxide into the greenhouses, doubling, tripling, and quadrupling the CO2 so the plants explode, and they do. Every time you double CO2, plant growth efficiency increases 35%. So the same tree or plant will grow 35% faster. It'll produce 35% more fruit or whatever it is, or vegetables. 35% more every time you double it. Here's an interesting thing, too. If CO2 drops below 150 parts per million, everything green in the planet dies. We're right at the bottom of where the CO2 level is. And they're telling us to stop CO2 pollution, stop all this stuff. You know, your first logical question I hope is in your mind, well, why would they do that? Because CO2 is expelled by every living thing on the planet. You are the enemy of the environmental movement. Productivity is the enemy of the environmental movement. All productivity produces CO2, whether you're making energy, whether you're driving around to work your businesses, air conditioner homes, everything produces, which is wonderful. And the most amazing thing of all that CO2, which is just a fraction of the environment, 1/4 of what it should be, that the amount made by man is less than 10% of the CO2 in the atmosphere. 90% is off the oceans. It's simply the way God designed the evaporation off the oceans and things like that. But that's the bedrock of the whole thing. Everything is based on that. And it's a complete lie. We should encourage businesses to start factories that are just pumping out CO2 around the clock if you really cared about what was green. Isn't that funny? God knew what he was doing. He knew the more people on the planet, the more food you're going to need, so the more CO2 they're going to produce, and it's going to help everything to grow bigger and faster and stronger, so there'll always be plenty of food for everyone. And yet, Africa, no, they can't get electricity because it's going to destroy, produce too much carbon emissions. So they have to live in squalor and poverty, dying. Over 50 million little black children have already died from the policies of the environmental movement, from malaria. 50 million, okay? And it keeps going. They won't let them use DDT to stop the mosquitoes from biting them. And DDT is harmless to the environment. And even if it wasn't, we don't care. Those little children are far more priceless than some little bird or whatever. But that's even been proven to be a lie. I know a man that goes around and talks on DDT, and he drinks some of it before every presentation. It is totally harmless. It's the most wonderful chemical used appropriately inside the homes to stop those malaria-carrying mosquitoes from killing all these young children. And not only them, but the 800 million people a year that get malaria that are adults, they don't die, but they're sick year after year. 800, almost a billion a year. Most of the world's suffering because of malaria, and we could snuff it out like we did in America. We used to have malaria here. We used DDT and snuffed it out. Because we go, that's not a good thing. That's hurting mankind. It's all a lie. But it's a scary lie. You know, Mr. Gorbachev I talked about? He is one of the leaders in this movement. A murderous communist dictator. He slaughtered hundreds of college students his last 2 years as leader of the Soviet Union. And he is still treated like a king in America. In fact, when I came to meet with Pavel that day a few years ago, I think 2012, that night, here in Houston, Gorbachev was speaking. So Pavel and I went together to hear him speak. And the elite of Houston, Texas, went berserk for him when he was speaking. He was introduced by whatever you have a big center downtown with a big arch, and it was in this building. He was introduced as the greatest human being of the last 50 years. This murderous, lying dictator. And when I found out this, how many of you have you heard of the Earth Charter? The Earth Charter is the new Ten Commandments for the environment that are supposed to be the new Ten Commandments for the 21st century. And I found out that they were written by Mr. Gorbachev. And let me tell you how scary this gets. They were written, and they're the blueprint for what they want to do with sustainability, which has nothing to do about, it's about slavery. But it's the blueprint for that worldwide. And guess what they keep that in? Guess what they keep the Earth Charter in? They made an exact replica of the Ark of the Covenant to keep that in. And people literally are worshiping to it around the world. It travels throughout the world year-round. They're praying to it, putting gifts before it. It gets scary. It is a Earth paganism, which now has made Earth the God, so man is the enemy. And when you do that, any totalitarian means necessary to save the planet is justified, because it's all about Mother Earth. Man is the enemy of Mother Earth. You can't sit on the sideline on this issue. Do you hear me? If you do, just like we sat on the sideline with the Great Society programs and things, there's going to be slaughter like the world has never seen. It's going to make the 20th century of the hundreds of millions killed by communism look like a joke. I truly believe by the end of this century, they will have killed at least 5 billion of us under the guise of saving the planet. I truly believe that through euthanasia, abortion, and other means. And so we've got our work cut out for us, because as a Christian, we know that every human being was made in the image of God, and they're precious and priceless, and we have to stand up to protect them. We have to expose these lies, because evil is just beginning to flourish, because we failed to stand up like we should, but we can repent of that and turn now and say, God, what would you have me to do? And then do it with courage and cheerfulness, whatever he asks you to do. The evangelical church here, again, I talked about it a little bit. In the film, I go back. In the early 1950s, the Congress of America, they had a committee called the Un-American Activities Committee. And they investigated what communism was doing in our country. And they interviewed some of the top communist leaders that had come over to our side. And they said our number one goal since the early 30s was to take over the divinity schools and the seminaries, because Christianity is our main target, and we've got to start teaching the pastors themselves so that we can control the whole church and use them as useful idiots for our cause. We can use them to push social justice or creation care or whatever little buzzword they create, to use us to push things in their a big government, regulation, and so on and so forth. And it goes into the details in the movie, but it's what's happened. We were warned, though. How many of you ever heard of a man, General William Booth? He was the founder of the Salvation Army. And he said this: the chief danger of the 20th century will be religion without the Holy Spirit, Christianity without Christ, forgiveness without repentance, salvation without regeneration, politics without God, and heaven without hell. It's exactly where we're sitting today. Do you know it's between 85 and 90% of our seminaries, evangelical seminaries in America, do not believe the Bible is the inerrant word of God? That's how successful they have been. That's why most churches, if you go to church here, and I know your pastor, I can tell by his talks last weekend and stuff, he does believe Genesis to Revelation. You be thankful. You listen, you obey, you support, you get behind, you invite guests in so this church can grow and have more impact in this community, and more impact in this community. That's all it starts with, is each individual person getting serious about following the Lord, and then grouping together where we can accomplish more together than we can by ourselves. But be grateful for what God has given you. We have been so blessed in this country. The next thing the film got into a little bit, and is the purposefulness of the economic espionage in this country. The reason why it's so hard to make ends meet, you got both parents working, but you still can't make it work, that was all planned out. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, I read so many articles by them that said, listen, we've got to create enough inflation where the woman has to work whether she wants to or not, so we get the kids. They understood it's about the kids. We don't. We give our kids any little thing coming along. Oh, Little League, you know, church group, just keep them away from us. We delegate all our responsibilities as parents in raising and teaching and training and discipling our children. And we will stand before God and give an account of that. We can't do that. But the economic things are purposeful. If you look at the next slide there, I mean, it's the reason why homes, in 1915, my grandfather bought a very nice house, this beautiful Victorian, for $4,500. And then in 65, I was raised in a very nice house on a lake in Florida that my dad paid $45,000 for. And our home in Idaho cost $450,000. Every 50 years, things go up 10 times in price. That's why it's so hard to make it. And that's with the inflation rates we've had, which most people think, oh, it's not a big deal. It is a big deal. It's purposely stealing our wealth. And the movie gets into the key people behind it who said, we are going to steal their wealth and they won't have a clue what's happening. You know who the man that said that is? John Maynard Keynes. What kind of... Yep, Keynesian economics, which is what we proudly boast we're Keynesian economists today. He said we're going to steal their wealth from them. They won't have a clue what's going on. We're going to impoverish them so we can control them. He goes, it will end in destruction. And he was happy about that. But we're all, Obama's a proud Keynesian. Most of the Republicans are proud Keynesian. The Bible says the borrower is servant to the lender. And that will not be defied. Getting more in debt will never solve your economic problems. Now I'm going to just move through a few things here. I guess one thing I want you to understand is, again, it's those, the leaders of the other side, there's many well-meaning people on every side of everything that have sucked into the propaganda out of being naive or whatever. But the people that are in charge of the policies and putting forward the issues and things, they know what they're doing. And we a lot of times legitimize them by acting like, oh, those Democrats just don't understand economic policy, or oh, they don't get this, or they don't get that, or whatever. And we're the ones being naive by saying that. They know exactly what they're doing. They're trying to hurt the economy. Why? Because they want dependency. It guarantees votes, which guarantees control. It's always that way. You couldn't be as consistent in doing things as anti-American as most of our politicians have been, unless it's purposeful. You couldn't be that consistent. You're going to be, I mean, I love the saying, consistency has never been a virtue of ignorance. When things are 100% consistent, it's not out of ignorance. It is a purposeful plan, and we have to accept that. We can't go, oh, they're just in fantasy land. They don't get it. They don't understand. They know what they're doing, and we need to stand in opposition to them. I just got a couple things here in closing. Do you remember this picture here? Any of you ever seen this one before? I love this picture. That sweet man called the Tank Man. In Tiananmen Square in 1989, there was a college protest, a peaceful college protest, just with signs, we'd like a little more freedom to listen to our music or to talk about ideas, no violence, no anything. And the Chinese government came in, rolled the tanks in, and this man stood in front of the line of tanks and he would not move. They started to go around him and he would go and step in front of them. They'd go the other way, and then he finally climbed up on top of them and stuff. And I heard they eventually took him out and executed him. That's the kind of commitment we need to truth. We're willing to stand up regardless of the cost, no matter what the cost is, because it is true. Jesus Christ said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. He is the truth. Whenever you are standing for the truth, you are standing for Jesus Christ. And any time you are cowardly and do not stand for the truth, you're turning your back on Jesus Christ. We can't do that. We have to stand with courage. I'm going to tell you a quick story here that's so important. It really impacted my life. In the 1980s, Romania had a dictator called Ceausescu, one of the most ruthless dictators in the communist world. He'd been there for decades. And in 19, in the December of 1989, he gave the orders to have one more of the many churches he'd bulldozed, one more church bulldozed. And he'd done this for 30 years to many of them. But this pastor and this congregation, just of a few people, they heard that was going to happen and they said, no, he's not going to bulldoze our church. We won't let him do that. And so the bulldozer showed up and they stood out front with candles just singing out front of their church, 25 people or whatever. And when the bulldozer got there, they didn't know what to do because they didn't know people were going to be there. So they went back to get orders. It was before cell phones and things. And they came back the next day and there was hundreds of people out there. So they went back again. They said, now there's hundreds. So they came back the next day and there was tens of thousands of people standing in front of this church, singing and holding a candle. And they were chanting something which tells me they understood the battle we are in. Do you know what they were chanting out there and as they were standing? There is God. There is God. They understood the lies of communism that says there is no God is a lie. They knew the whole battle was over God or man. We're going to do things God's way and be subservient to Him, or we're going to be ruled by tyrants. There's no other alternative in this world. And they understood that. And their way of saying that was, there is God. You can do whatever you want, but we know God is there. And they stood there. Finally, Ceausescu gave them the orders, kill them. And they started machine gunning down those sweet Christians out there. And they didn't leave. They took the bullets and they're machine gunning them down. And I believe God supernaturally answered their prayers and their sacrifice. You know what happened? They killed about 500 of them. And then all of a sudden, the communist soldiers stopped shooting them. And God pierced their heart through. They realized they were killing their own people. And He opened their eyes to that. They'd been doing it for 30 years, but all of a sudden God revealed their eyes. And those tanks turned. They drove back to the palace. They got Ceausescu and his wife, and they took them out and executed them. That night, it was Christmas Eve, 1989, and the next morning, the paper in Romania, a communist country, said, the Antichrist is dead, Jesus is born. They had no weapons, no power, no influence. But God blessed their courage, and communism ended in Romania. They were willing to die for what they believed in, and we need to be too. Jesus is worth it. I promise you that. I promise you He is so worth it. It would be a blessing to have the privilege of dying for Him. None of us want things to happen like that, and He knows that. He knows we're cowards if we're so fleshly and whatever. But if we have to take that thing, like many great people in history have, He's worth it. He is so worth it. And we need to think about that. Now, I'm going to show you one last little clip here. If you go just to the very last clip, don't start it quite yet. I want to say one last thing here. Before you show that, I want to say one thing. Again, I think too often in life, we get overwhelmed by the big picture. We see America crumbling and go, I can't save America. And that's right, you can't. But God can. And I want to tell you this. I think the key, the total key for us as Christians in winning this battle for truth and righteousness is one thing. It can be summed up in one word and nothing else. Obedience. Obedience. We have to obey. God told us exactly how things are to be done. He gave us His book. He gave us the truth. We have to obey Him. Regardless of the cost, we have to obey, 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 and be asking Him, I don't know what He wants me to do. Well, start reading His book every day, first of all, and you'll see many things, like sharing the gospel with everyone you meet. Make a commitment today that you are not going to bed each night the rest of your life if you haven't shared the gospel or given a tract to at least one person. Don't you do it. Don't just, God, if it's 11 o'clock at night, I'll go find someone. But I am going to share the gospel, the truth of You with someone every day the rest of my life. And hopefully more than that. But start there. There's great tracts you can give out at first if you're nervous. There's a program called The Way of the Master by Ray Comfort that just had a great impact on me and effective ways of communicating the gospel. And maybe as a church sometime you could watch through those. I really appreciated the message of those. But in 2008, I felt God wanted our family to make a film. And I kind of said no for about 6 months while I was praying about it. And I finally realized He really does. And so I said, okay, God, we'll do it. But we've never made a film before. You have to help. And He did. And I just want to tell you, everyone has a different task. But that's what He asked us to do. And right as we were starting to make that film, we hadn't even bought a camera yet, my kids said, Daddy, they'd heard that there was a big film festival in Texas, in San Antonio, that had a $100,000 grand prize for Best of Festival. And they said, Daddy, why don't we fast and pray this Friday that your film, the one I haven't even started on, I haven't even bought a camera yet, wins that festival. I was like, okay. You never want to discourage anyone from fasting and praying, but I was like, oh my goodness. So that's kind of a big request. So we did it. The next Friday, I went in to get breakfast stuff out, and my daughter said, Daddy, it's Friday. We're going to fast that the film wins. I said, oh, this Friday too. I didn't realize that. She goes, every Friday until it wins. To make a long story short, this is your God too. It's not just my God. We fasted and prayed every single Friday as a family for 22 months until God did this.
In 2007, I was a state representative, and I had no idea the things I would discover about why America was collapsing from within would motivate me to take my life savings and make a film. And I had never made a film before. During the 2 years it took to finish the project, my children prayed daily that it would win the largest single cash prize film festival in America, which in my thinking was a mighty tall order. But of course, it wasn't for God.
The 2010 $101,000 grand prize for Best of Festival goes to Agenda!
God is so good. I'd like to thank Him for just the wonderful wife He gave me. I don't think any man can even reach a fraction of his potential if he doesn't have the woman with him that God intended him to have for life. And I want to thank her. Kids, I'm giving this to you so you always remember God does answer prayers. Thank you so much.
The way we talk it is about it as a family, and what I want to encourage you in closing here is we have to be willing to give God our loaves and fishes. He's the one that feeds the 5,000. Whatever He is giving you, give it to Him and say, God, You do something with this. Whatever it is, You are responsible for your circle of influence. You have a different one than I have. You have a different one than your pastor has, but you will give an account of that circle of influence. Use it wisely. Give it to God. He can do the miraculous. He can take someone that hates standing in front of people and put them in front of people and hopefully give them something to say to impact people's lives. He does the miracles, but we have to be willing. We have to say, God, I give You everything that I have and everything that I am. I ask You to use it to glorify Yourself, and He will do it. I promise you. Thank you so much.
Awesome, huh? Let's give another round of applause. Love it. Just real quick, speaking of tracks, if you, on your way to the bathroom, on the right wall, we have a whole track rack there that are theologically sound tracks. So feel free to take those and give them away. Also, on the left side, as you're going out, we have a CD ministry and a DVD ministry, sermons we've done here. All that stuff is free. Take whatever you want. If you want to help us a little bit with the cost of the conference, there's some offering boxes in the back, only as the Lord lays that on your heart. Curtis has a table set up in the back. Actually, not in the back, but on the right, on the way out. Ann, you can sit down, by the way. She's sitting in the front. She thought everybody was still standing. And that's what we do at the end of our church services anyway, so she was just following protocol. We're going to take, I have one more announcement, a 15-minute break, and then we're going to come back for a Q&A. But before I dismiss you for the break, I want to make you aware that Curtis is going to be showing a movie and doing a Q&A tomorrow night at Sugar Creek Baptist Church through a ministry called Salt and Light. So if you want to go to that, I need you to talk to Stephanie Price. Is she here? Can you stand up just for a second? She's the one to talk to if you're interested in the event tomorrow night. All right, so we will see you in 15 minutes.